Now, we turn to the story of a surprising success in the world of fashion. Androgyny comes and goes in the fashion world, but one male model takes it to the extreme by modeling clothes for both men and women. Andre Pajak is gaining notoriety in high fashion, even as most men who bend genders face a tough time in society. NPR's Binoush Ahmed caught up with him at a recent photo shoot for Out magazine.
In a converted warehouse studio in New York City, Andre Pajak takes a final sip of his Earl Grey tea. His ivory skin and platinum blonde hair glow as he steps into position against a stark white background. The photographer raises his camera.
Andre, keep moving around him. Yes.
Pajak seductively arches his thin frame into four big, buff male models. He angles his baby soft face towards the camera to accentuate his cutting cheekbones. Brent Coover is fashion editor of Out magazine, which is geared towards a gay and lesbian audience. To him, Pajak's androgynous look means fashion doesn't have to be about macho men anymore.
For so long of my life, I had to look at images of male models who are super muscular, super hunky, look like Ken dolls, and maybe it's time to see another concept of what a man can be.
Coover thinks models with an ambiguous gender help expand the idea of beauty beyond masculine and feminine archetypes. Andre Pajak remembers being pushed to give up playing dress-up in heels and skirts as a child.
I was told that I had to be more boyish and fit that social role, but that didn't make me happy and it didn't really work.
Pajak was born in Bosnia and fled with his Serbian mother and brother to a refugee camp when the war broke out, then on to Australia. His Croatian father stayed behind. Pajak started modeling after an agent approached him in a McDonald's he worked at in Melbourne. After graduating from high school, he moved to Europe to pursue modeling full-time. One of his first big jobs was for French Vogue.
I just walked in the set, and they said put him in a Fendi dress, because that's what's going to look good, and they were right.
Pajak quickly started to get more work in women's wear than men's, and unlike that Fendi dress that just happened to fit, top designers began to make dresses with Pajak in mind. In this Cinderella story, Pajak's moment at the ball came last year. The eminent and envelope-pushing designer Jean-Paul Gaultier sent Pajak down the runway in a sheer bridal gown. He had hardly walked 10 steps when the room burst into applause.
I felt like the happiest bride.
And why not? Pajak's career is sort of a fashion fairy tale on fast forward. Pajak has worked with some of the world's most celebrated designers, and he's only 20. He has a serious presence in the industry. But many people outside of it don't know what to make of him.
How do you prove your push-up bra can push up even the most minuscule bust? Have a man model it.
That man, as CNN's Jeannie Most noted, was none other than Andre Pajak. He appeared as a buxom blonde in plunging necklines and posters for a bra by Hema, a Dutch dime store. Pajak admits it was sort of a gimmick, but says in the end,
it did work. I think the bra did sell.
Fashion models are these desired goods that also lend value to commodities.
Ashley Mears worked as a model to inform her book about the inner dealings of the fashion industry. She says the ads Pajak's used in could backfire when consumers learn he's actually a man. That's partly because Pajak plays into one of the biggest criticisms of fashion models, that they're way too thin, and designers only want to showcase women who look like young boys. Pajak's been called fashion's greatest insult to women. But Mira says Pajak isn't the problem.
Fashion has been insulting women for a long time with unrealistic body standards.
Pajak's unique ability to go from menswear to womenswear has captivated the world of fashion. But Pajak says he's not out to change the world. He's just doing his job. Up next, he'll be featured in ads for Jean-Paul Gaultier's new cologne. Binoush Ahmed, NPR News, Washington.
If you'd like to see photos of model Andre Pajak, log on to NPR.org and select Tell Me More from the Programs tab.
The nation's Hispanic population is exploding, and that is creating another boom in Hispanic media. In recent months, several major media players have announced plans to join the competition for the Hispanic television audience. There's a new Hispanic TV network coming, plus a host of new cable channels aimed at Latinos. As NPR's Greg Allen reports from Miami, they are not all in Spanish.
The numbers tell the story. According to the census, the U.S. Hispanic population jumped by more than 40% in the last decade. The nation's 50 million-plus Hispanics now make up 16% of the television viewing public, and those numbers are expected to grow. Univision is already the nation's fourth-largest network. It hits number one in some markets and time slots. 4 years ago, the network's growing clout was recognized when it hosted both the Democratic and Republican candidates in primary debates. This year, Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney sat down for extended interviews in a candidate forum hosted by Univision anchor Jorge Ramos.
We just released a poll, a Univision poll, that says that if you were to run against President Barack Obama, he would beat you easily with a Hispanic vote. You wouldn't even get 25%. You would lose the general election. No?
Just wait. We'll get that quote out there where you say I'm Mexican-American. I'll do a lot better.
On Univision, that interview was broadcast with a simultaneous Spanish translation.
Historically, Univision was Spanish first and Spanish only, and they were adamant about that.
Roberto Orsi, the CEO of Acento Advertising in Los Angeles, says that's beginning to change. Univision recently began broadcasting its primetime telenovelas with English subtitles, something competitor Telemundo has done for years. It recognizes changes in the Hispanic population shown in the census. Over the last decade, most of the growth in the Latino population came not from immigration, but from births, kids born and now being raised in the U.S. Market research shows only about a fifth of U.S. Hispanics now prefer Spanish-language programming on TV. The rest, some 80% of the Latino population, are bilingual or prefer English. Helen DeJesus is a good example. She's bilingual, a second-generation Cuban-American who lives in a Miami suburb.
I don't watch Spanish channel, and in a way that's a bad thing, because I should, especially for my son.
DeJesus says watching Hispanic TV growing up helped her sharpen her Spanish language skills. But she's part of a growing Latino population that's moving to English language TV. Roberto Orsi says that trend is sending a clear message to Hispanic broadcasters.
We have to appeal to them in culture, but in the language of their preference. And a lot of the bilingual Hispanics watch English language television and Spanish language television. So you want to be able to reach them where they are.
Orsi greets as good news recent reports that Univision is in talks with Disney to develop an English-language all-news channel aimed at Hispanics. It's one of several new cable channels for Latinos planned by Univision and other media companies. Cable operator Comcast recently announced plans for two new channels, including one that will be run by movie director Robert Rodriguez. It also will be in English. It joins competitors already out there, like Nuevo TV, an English-language channel aimed at a young, bicultural Latino audience. The number two Spanish network, Telemundo, is part of NBC Universal. It's long made English part of its programming, both in the use of Spanglish and in subtitles for telenovelas, like Una Maid in Manhattan.
No es bueno tragarse los corajes. Es mejor sacarlos. ¿Contigo? No.
Telemundo Chief Operating Officer Jacqueline Hernandez says reaching Hispanics is about more than language. It's also about their culture. Her network's telenovelas, she says, recognize that.
They're created in the U.S. for the U.S. Hispanic audience, and they reflect the world that we live in. So it's a great draw and attraction for the bicultural audience.
Anticipating the move toward a younger bilingual audience, several years ago, Telemundo launched a cable channel, Mundos. The channel's name is written M-U-N with the number 2 after it, Mundos in Spanish. It features several bilingual programs, including a reality show with Mexican pop singer Jenny Rivera.
She's coming to a hood near you, taking shots of tequila with you. Yeah, she's a superstar, but she goes so hard. Go, Jenny.
Telemundo's Jacqueline Hernandez.
We do a show about her life, and it takes place in Long Beach, and it's in English because she and her family, that's how they roll, and they speak English at home. And so the show will have English with a little Spanglish, but it's really authentic.
In one show last season, Rivera operates a taco truck.
I am a hardworking Mexican-American woman who can make excellent records and excellent tacos.
Now the two Hispanic networks, Telemundo and Univision, are getting a new competitor. Fox, which already operates three Hispanic cable channels, this fall plans to launch Mundo Fox, a Spanish-language TV network. The network, which is working now to sign up station affiliates, will draw programming from some of Fox's Spanish-language cable channels. But CEO of Fox International Channels, Hernan Lopez, says he expects the new network's strongest draw will be action dramas, shows that he thinks will have broader appeal than traditional telenovelas.
We were presented it as a Latino network with an American attitude. It is in Spanish, but with the level of quality that viewers are used to in American television.
Lopez says the network may be including closed caption English subtitles on some programs. Advertising executive Roberto Orsi says it wasn't that long ago that many in the industry thought the future of Hispanic television was limited. As immigrants settled in, it was supposed they'd assimilate. And over a generation or two, Latinos would leave Hispanic programming for the mainstream media. But rather than assimilating, Orsi says, U.S. Hispanics have acculturated.
Which means we take the best of the American culture that we came to adopt and love, and we keep the best of our culture that we value. And so you have this hybrid American that is very proud and happy to be an American, but is very proud and happy to have his culture that makes him unique or her unique.
The competition for a rapidly growing Hispanic bicultural market is happening not just in television, but also in radio, social media, the web, and mobile platforms. For media companies looking to grow, Hispanics now look less like a niche market and more like the future. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
Former child stars seem doomed for tabloid drama, drug problems, meltdowns, nude photos. Well, here's the story of a former child star who has turned into a success. 20 years ago, Fred Savage was on the hit show The Wonder Years. Now he's a television producer and director who makes wicked, slightly warped comedies, including one that starts tonight on NBC. Here's NPR's Neda Ulubi.
Right now, Fred Savage is in the thick of producing a new pilot. So just for the next few weeks, he's working in a worn-out temporary office at a Studio City Lot in Los Angeles. It's got an old, gross green carpet, battered cheap desk, not much else.
I'm in and out of here. So you see a lamp and a phone and my computer. Actually, as I'm describing it, it sounds terrible. There's an open box of miso soup packets.
Fred Savage is a happy man. He's hit his stride at age 35 as a successful, somewhat offbeat TV producer and director.
It kind of feeds me and inspires me and excites me in a way that I never got, you know, as an actor.
Savage acted for a while after attending Stanford University. He tried to break type from his puppyish Wonder Years days. So he played a rapist on Law & Order SVU and a junkie in the movie Rules of Attraction. Then he started producing and directing kid shows, and in 2008, a grown-up comedy. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia has a cheerful name and a twisted little heart. It airs on the cable channel FX and Comedy Central. It's about three completely amoral friends who run a bar where minors have no problems getting served.
These kids are wasted, bro. I thought we were cutting them off.
I'm cutting them off. These kids haven't had more than three drinks each. Plus, there's so much water in them, they're probably more hydrated than they ever have been in their entire lives.
Savage wanted to produce the show because he saw his own worst qualities in the characters.
My selfishness and my arrogance and hubris and ego and all these things that you're not supposed to really exercise in public.
He had a different connection to the next darkly funny sitcom he produced and directed. It was about actors, unhappily employed at a catering company called Party Down.
Oh, white wine, please.
Coming right up.
Hey, I know you. You look so familiar to me.
The main character, played by Adam Scott, had a flicker of fame in a beer commercial, then he couldn't find more work. Everyone on the show hustled for stardom with varying degrees of ineptitude.
When I auditioned for Cannonball Run 2, do you know what I did to the girl that I was up against?
I don't know if I want to know.
I hit her with my car.
Your car?
And it felt right.
It was purgatory. You're not where you want to be, or you're coming down from where you could have been.
Party Down lasted only two seasons on the Starz cable channel, but it's found a dedicated following on streaming and DVD. Fred Savage also feels connected to his new comedy starting tonight on NBC. His wife's intense relationship with her best friend is just like the one on the show.
What happened?
Peter annexed me divorce papers.
Best Friends Forever is about two female best friends, one with a live-in boyfriend and one who moves in while she's getting divorced. Awkward hijinks ensue, like when the boyfriend accidentally walks in naked.
Get out of here! No, it's worse from behind! It's worse from behind!
The show was created by Jessica St. Clair and Lennon Parham, who fall squarely in the Wonder Years demographic. They were startled when network executives suggested Savage to executive produce their show.
They were like, you have to meet with Fred Savage. And we're like, wait, Fred Savage
of the Wonder Years? Like,
we had his poster from Teen Beat, Tiger Beat, on our walls as children. Okay. Yes, please.
And in case you were wondering,
he's not one of those child stars who, like, got ugly. He's only cuter.
He looks exactly the same.
Only as a man.
A man.
There are real advantages to working with someone who's been in the business since childhood, says Jessica St. Clair. Savage was able to make their relatively inexpensive sitcom look like a high-end indie film.
He knows the right people to hire. That's part of it.
It's also that he's smooth on sets, she says.
You know, I've been on sets for a long time, you know, since I was a little kid.
So Savage knows how to manage the hierarchies and protocols. And he spent his entire childhood absorbing tastes and professional tricks.
Whether or not I knew it then, I don't think when I was six, I was like, oh, when I'm a producer, I'm going to change that. Or, oh, when I was eight, I was like, oh, that's great. When I'm a producer, I'm going to keep that. But, you know, you remember the things that you felt worked really well and the things that you don't feel worked very well.
Fred Savage says he has absolutely no regrets about being a child star. In no way, he says, does the experience preordain people for a lifetime of addiction, sloppy bids for attention, or soft crime.
I do bristle at the notion that it's this terrible thing.
In fact, Savage protests those stereotypes of former child stars.
You can still have a very productive, crime-free life when you're growing up in show business. I'm sure there's a lot more kids that played Little League who've gone on to become murderers, but no one says, oh, don't play Little League.
Savage has two kids of his own right now. They're 5 and 3. He's fine if they want to become child actors. It's even okay if they want to play Little League. Netta Ulubi, NPR News.
Movie star Kerry Washington disappears so completely into her roles that it's going to take you a minute to recognize her voice.
He has always been like this. He just chose not to show you until now.
So I'll put up with some terrible stuff. And maybe that makes me part to blame, but I ain't scared no more.
You know I love you. I love you and those boys more than anything in this world.
No, that's a damn lie, and you know it!
I can sort of tell what film someone's going to reference when they're approaching me. You know, like adolescent boys, it's always going to be Fantastic Four. When a European approaches me, it's usually going to be Last King of Scotland. Older women in their 60s or 70s, it's always Ray. So I can kind of tell girls in their 20s and 30s always save The Last Dance. I can foresee what the film is going to be when somebody's walking up to me.
Soon people might walk up to Kerry Washington after seeing her on TV. She stars in a new network drama called Scandal that premieres tonight. Her character, Olivia Pope, is a crisis manager for powerful DC clients. And with the backdrop of Washington, peeks into the Oval Office, and a whole lot of fast talking, it's only inevitable that Scandal will be compared to the great DC drama that came before, The West Wing.
Oh, boy. It's sort of impossible to avoid that reference. And we even have Josh Molina, who was a cast member on West Wing. He appears on our show as well in every episode, which I always think is great because it sort of provides a little secret DC credibility. But our show's different because I think in the way that all of Shonda Rhimes' shows are sort of about the environment, but not really. You know, the show is about Washington, it is about crisis management, but it's mostly about people.
You mentioned Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Rhimes is the executive producer of the program, and she's best known for Grey's Anatomy, but also has shows like Private Practice, and she's really great at coming up with these big multicultural casts and doing these kind of amazing evening dramas. And this one is based on the real-life crisis manager Judy Smith. She was a deputy press secretary for George H.W. Bush, who later became a big-time crisis consultant. She worked with Monica Lewinsky. She worked with Idaho Senator Larry Craig. How closely did you study with Judy Smith? I mean, did you call her? What did you learn from her?
I'm one of these actors who's kind of addicted to research. So Judy gave me her phone number early on. And I think it sometimes may have regretted it because I've called her at all kinds of hours. But also she's been present in the writer's room. And what the writers have done is said, you know, let's come up with an incredible problem that seems like it cannot be solved. And then let's call Judy and ask her what she would do.
And your character is called, her name is Olivia Pope, and we have a clip here I want to play, which gives sort of a good idea of what she's like. She's doing a favor for the president, and she approaches a woman, a staffer of his, who's claiming to have had an affair.
He gave me this dog.
See, it's those kind of lies that could hurt you if you said them to other people not as nice as me.
I'll give you some free advice. Hand in your resignation, then pack up your dog and your things, get in your car and go. Find a small city, Minneapolis maybe, or Denver. Get a little job, meet a boring boy, make some friends. Because in this town, your career is over. You're done.
Why are you doing this to me? I'm a good person.
You know who else was a good person? Monica Lewinsky. And she was telling the truth, but she still got destroyed.
Zousers. I actually had a moment where I was like, this lady's mean. What the heck? Like, I want to be rooting for you, but I'm not sure you're the good guy at this point of the program anyway.
Well, again, it's one of the really fun things about this show, because I think in life it's never quite that simple, that there's always a good guy and a bad guy, and that the show is mostly about human beings trying to do the best they can, but being complicated and interesting, layered, real people.
And of course, we've seen several movie actresses come to TV in the last few years. I'm wondering what the transition has been like for you.
It's been really fun for me. It's been tough because it's a different level of work. You know, I remember one day talking to my mom and her saying, what is the big deal? You work 16, 17-hour days on movies all the time. And I had to explain that it's three times the number of pages, though, on television.
It sounds very dense, the amount of fast talking, and it's a lot of talking.
Yeah, it is. We call it scandal pace. And I would often get these scripts and go, oh my goodness, this speech is two pages long.
So if the show takes off, you ready to commit for a couple years of television?
I mean, I can't imagine a more exciting prospect. I'm very drawn to diversity and experience in my work. And so I am excited that, you know, in the hiatus from the TV show, I'm doing a film right now and I have a few films coming out. And I
is this Django Unchained with Quentin Tarantino?
Yes. Yeah.
We have our eye on that film.
So I just hope to continue to be able to do lots of different things. But having Scandal as my artistic professional home base would be really fun.
Well, Kerry Washington, thank you so much for opening up to us and talking about the show.
Thank you so much. This is for a kid who's grown up listening to NPR, this is a dream come true.
That's actress Kerry Washington. She stars in the new drama Scandal, which debuts tonight on ABC.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.